How evil is Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer? They conspired to block the coronavirus recovery bill that was designed to help the American people through this pandemic. They could not resist trying to fill this bill with demands for unprecedented collective bargaining powers for unions. They wanted to expand wind and solar tax credits. They wanted to increase fuel emission standards for airlines to lessen their carbon footprint. They wanted money for the Kennedy Center. They wanted $100,000 for public broadcasting, and they wanted tens of millions for their own congressional needs, as well as other special interest pork barrel spending. Pelosi even tried to slip in language to bring more money for Planned Parenthood and their abortion mills. None of that had any business in this much-needed recovery bill. Democrats knew that they would never get those special interest perks passed, and so they decided to hold up the recovery bill, hold it hostage, in hopes that Republicans would bow to them and let them load this bill with nonsense. Every American who lost their job, those whose businesses were being closed, and those knocked to their knees by the impact of this pandemic need to go to the polls in November and take the majority of the House away from Nancy Pelosi and Democrats, and vote out those Democrat senators who marched in lockstep with Pelosi and Schumer. Of all the Democrat House members and Senate members, nobody has been willing to break ranks with those two demagogues. No mind of their own, no concern for the people in their district who trusted them with their office. Just sheep blindly following their shepherds. Just as we remember the Alamo, we must never forget this massive betrayal of the American people. If I sound angry today, it's because I am angry. After 57 years in radio and television, I know that words matter and how they can be manipulated to confuse the public. In the last few days, we've seen the politically correct police swamp the media with complaints about the China virus being called the China virus. The useful idiots among us on the left are happy to assist the Chinese government's attempts to cover up their handling of the coronavirus that began in Wuhan, China. They are delighted to attack our president on behalf of the Chinese president. Anything to damage Donald Trump. This virus came from China, and that's why it should be called the China virus. This isn't aimed at the Chinese people, who had no hand in their government's attempts to conceal the dangers of this virus. The Spanish flu of 1918 was called that because it came from Spain. Same with the Hong Kong flu of a few years back. 2015's West Nile virus, 2012's Middle East coronavirus, and the German measles. It's why the Washington Post is called the Washington Post. The New York Times called the New York Times. The Chicago Tribune called the Chicago Tribune. Obviously, because that's where the papers come from. The coronavirus came from China, and that's why it could and should be known as the China virus. If we allow the left-wing PC crowd to get away with this lunacy, we only prompt them to continue to direct us in what we think and what we say. As for President Trump's response to the China virus, it has been excellent. When learning of the virus that China sought to conceal, our president acted quickly in January to stop traffic coming into America from China. For his efforts, Democrats and the media called Trump a racist. Joe Biden called Trump a xenophobe for the travel ban that was designed to keep infected people from coming to our shores. Both Democrat presidential candidates, Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, have said they would not have stopped that traffic from China. Both of them still call for open borders. That is the lunatic fringe speaking. Compare President Trump's response to that of Barack Hussein Obama and Joe Biden during the swine flu pandemic. Oh, Biden? I like that play on words. Obama Biden waited months before acting. Nearly 61 million people in the United States had gotten the swine flu, and 12,469 had died from it. The Obama-Biden administration finally called it a national emergency. Finally. But not until October 24, 2009, months after the flu was sweeping across America. The medical community was not ready for the enormity of the swine flu pandemic, and neither was Obama or Biden. Yet they were not put under constant attack by Republicans and the media. No government can prepare itself for pandemics that hit without warning. Why would our medical community have hundreds of millions of masks and breathing apparatuses on hand when there was no expectation of any need for them? Second-guessing and finger-pointing does nothing to help us. Using the China coronavirus for political attacks against President Trump is despicable. This is an American crisis, and all patriotic Americans should be united in fighting it. Sadly, this has not been the case. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are government leaders. Neither one of them anticipated this China virus or called for a stockpile of materials to fight it. Yet they are content to take to the friendly airways to criticize the president for not doing what they themselves did not do. It's foolishness and it's dangerous. In today's commentary, I give credit to Beckett Adams of the Washington Times, the Daily Signal, and Steven Pinker of the Guardian for their research and input, which I have merged with my own. Here's a question for you, and I'm deadly serious. Do you agree with the mainstream media that you are a moron? It seems that the White House press corps includes people who believed it when they were told as children that there is no such thing as a stupid question. I assure you, there most certainly is. And many of them are coming from some of the men and women in media who cover the White House. White House correspondents. Covering politics with a sense of fairness requires real journalists to acknowledge that politicians, even the ones they despise, at some point, somewhere, on some matter, do something right. Not so President Trump. The mainstream media simply cannot admit that anything the man has done or is doing or is thinking is good for the United States. Why? Because it will reflect positively on Trump, and they must defeat him in 2020. They just won't allow anything good to be said about Trump. Ever since he announced his plan to run for president, Donald Trump has drawn more negative press than any presidential candidate or president in the history of this country. Month after month, going back to the start of his campaign, without interruption, Trump's coverage on evening newscast has hovered around 90% negative. Trump haters will argue that even 90% negative coverage is too kind. To acknowledge that Trump got two outstanding Supreme Court justices confirmed or succeeded in passing a massive corporate tax bill that has generated huge employment numbers, or has taken millions off of the welfare rolls and food stamps, or virtually destroyed ISIS, or wiped out thousands of oppressive regulations. That isn't providing news, according to today's media and Democrats. It is enabling a man they hate. Every new and successful Trump policy exposes the failures of his predecessor, former President Barack Hussein Obama, can only watch in what should be shame as his policy prescriptions on the economy, on foreign policy, on regulation, and pretty much everything else have proven to be failures. But Obama has no shame, and neither do his acolytes. Obama hit the road giving his pathetic, look at me, I did it. Yes, I did it. Those were his speeches to steal the credit. And liberal reporters trip over their own camera cords, running to give him coverage. We expect MSNBC and CNN to be crooked, but look at the spin of Trump's coverage on ABC, CBS, and NBC evening newscasts since July 29, 2016, when the conventions ended, the candidates had been nominated, and the general election contest was officially up and running. There were 95 positive statements about Trump, 95, while 726 statements were negative. That computes to 88% negative spin. And Trump had not even taken office yet. Throughout the entire general election campaign, the tone was remarkably steady. In August, the media spin was 87% negative against Trump. In September, it was 94% negative. And in October, it was 90% negative. Still, Trump won. This was during the 2016 campaign. Now, look at the numbers for Trump beginning on Inauguration Day, January 20, 2017. There's usually that initial 1 to 2 month stretch known traditionally as the honeymoon period, when a new president is given the time to get their presidential sea legs. The press bent over backwards to gush and fawn over Barack Hussein Obama. But for Trump, on his first night in office, the networks were brutal on his inaugural address. NBC's anti-Trump reporter Chuck Todd denounced it. At ABC, Terry Moran was sniffing for hate when Trump used the term America first. There would be no honeymoon. They determined that. Consider that Trump had taken no action, good or bad, for the press to attack. He had barely turned the lights on in the Oval Office. During the final 12 days of January, the traditional honeymoon spin was 85% negative, unheard of in American politics. In both February and March, it hit 91% negative. It has been thus for every single month of Trump's presidency. Whether or not the world is getting worse, the nature of news will interact with the nature of cognition to make us think it is. News is about things that happen, not things that don't happen. We never see a journalist saying to the camera, "I'm reporting live from a country where war has not broken out," or a city that has not been bombed, or a school that has not been shot up. As long as bad things have not vanished from the face of the earth, there will always be enough incidents to fill the news, especially when billions of smartphones turn most of the world's population into crime reporters and war correspondents. Bad things can happen quickly, like this coronavirus. But good things aren't built in a day, and as they unfold, they will be out of sync with the news cycle. The peace researcher John Gatton pointed out that if a newspaper came out only once in 50 years, it would not report half a century of celebrity gossip and political scandals. It would report momentous global changes, such as an increase in life expectancy. Plane crashes always make the news, but car crashes, which kill far more people, almost never do. Not surprisingly, people have a fear of flying, but almost no one has a fear of driving. People rank tornadoes, which kill about 50 Americans a year, as a more common cause of death than asthma, which kills more than 4,000 Americans a year, presumably because tornadoes make for better television. Putting aside the wiggles and waves that reflect the crisis of the day, we see that the impression that the news has become more negative over time is real. The New York Times got steadily more morose from the early 60s to the early 70s. Then they lightened up just a bit, but just a bit in the 80s and 90s, and then sank into a progressively worse mood in the first decade of the new century. News outlets in the rest of the world, too, became gloomier and gloomier from the late 70s to the present day. The consequences of negative news are themselves negative. Far from being better informed, heavy news watchers can become miscalibrated. They worry more about crime, even when crime rates are falling. And sometimes they part company with reality altogether. One poll found that a large majority of Americans follow news about ISIS closely. And 77% agreed that Islamic militants operating in Syria and Iraq pose a serious threat to the existence and survival of the United States. That's a belief that is nothing short of delusional. Consumers of negative news, not surprisingly, become glum, and they become fatalistic, saying things like, "Why should I vote? It's not going to help," or, "I could donate money, but there's always going to be another kid who's starving next week." Media scholars who tally news stories of different kinds or present the editors with a menu of possible stories and see which they pick and how they display them had confirmed that the gatekeepers prefer negative to positive coverage, especially when it comes to Donald Trump. That, in turn, provides an easy formula for pessimists on the editorial page. Make a list of all the worst things that are happening anywhere on the planet that week, and you have an impressive-sounding, but ultimately irrational case that civilization has never faced greater peril. America faces an epic choice in this very year. The results will define the country for a generation. These are perilous times. Partisan politics are warping the conversation, getting in the way of public health and global security. Truth is being chased away. Rampant disinformation, partisan news sources, and social media's tsunami of fake news is no basis on which to inform the American people in 2020. The need for a robust, independent media has never been greater. We can argue about many things, but the need for an honest, unbiased media is not one for argument. On December 7, 1941, after Japan had bombed Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt told the American people that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. When President Trump tries to convey that same message to us regarding the coronavirus, Democrats and their media allies accuse him of offering false hope. The mainstream media is in a hurry to delegitimize President Donald Trump. In doing so, they are delegitimizing themselves. Is it any wonder that the president distrusts and even hates the American media? Let me give you some examples why Trump is justified to strike back at those biased critics. It's not one example alone, but the confluence of all of them that is so outlandish. Combined together, there's little doubt why the president and his team should take a combative tone with the press. Let's compare the language used in the Associated Press tweets on Barack Hussein Obama's 2013 inauguration with that of Donald Trump's in 2017. About Obama's inauguration, the AP tweeted, "A day pulsing with history draws masses to President Barack Obama's second inauguration." Their tweet about Trump's inauguration was this: "Hundreds of thousands expected to clog the nation's capital for Donald Trump's inauguration." Apparently, the masses attending Obama's inauguration did not clog the nation's capital. Minutes after Trump was sworn in, multiple news outlets ran Trump impeachment stories. This before the new president had done anything in the Oval Office. The Washington Post headline on Inauguration Day was, "The campaign to impeach President Trump has begun." Remember, all Trump had done at that time was beat Hillary Clinton. Huffington Post said, "Here are the current odds on Trump being impeached." Time magazine said, "There's already a campaign to impeach Donald Trump." The New York Daily News, "Here's how President Trump may have already set himself up for impeachment." Again, Trump had done nothing except beat Hillary Clinton. On ABC News, analyst Terry Moran said, "People want to hear that message of America first. However, it carries with it overtones from the 1930s when an anti-Semitic movement was underway. The words themselves carry very ugly echoes in our history." Then why did Moran think people wanted to hear them? MSNBC's Chris Matthews called Trump's speech Hitlerian, and the Washington Post immediately revised an article titled "President Trump's America First was popularized by Nazi sympathizers." This is all insane. For starters, Donald Trump's daughter, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Trump's grandchildren are all Orthodox Jews. Not to mention, in President Trump's speech, he said this: "When you open your heart to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice." Trump said, "The Bible tells us how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity." Those lines would never have been in a Nazi speech. Also, President Trump restored Winston Churchill's bust to the Oval Office after Obama had had it taken away. Churchill helped to eradicate the Nazis. The Atlantic wrote that Trump's inauguration speech was unusually dark. USA Today thought it was short, dark, and deviant. And the New York Times declared it was a dark, hard-line speech. But let's recall some lines from Barack Hussein Obama's 2009 inauguration speech. Here's what he said: "That we are in the midst of crisis is now well understood." He said, "Our nation is at war against a far-reaching network of violence and hatred. Our economy is badly weakened, a consequence of greed and irresponsibility on the part of some, but also our collective failure to make hard choices and prepare the nation for a new age. Homes have been lost, jobs shed, businesses shuttered. Our health care is too costly. Our schools fail too many, and each day brings further evidence that the ways we use energy strengthen our adversaries and threatens our planet. These are indicators of crisis, subject to data and statistics," Obama said. "Less measurable, but no less profound, is a sapping of confidence across our land, a nagging fear that America's decline is inevitable and that the next generation must lower its sights." Now that was hardly an upbeat message. In fact, it was very dark. Yet in 2009, it was met with universal praise by the media. So according to the failed press, dark times are brighter when a progressive is in charge. The Washington Post, in an effort undoubtedly aimed at trying to undermine the president's legitimacy by fanning flames of a Russian cybersecurity threat, ran with a story that falsely claimed that Russia had hacked into the electrical grid of a Vermont utility. The false story, published without getting a comment from that utility, set off panic among journalists, and soon it went viral. It took the Post 2 days to completely debunk its own false story. But by then, the damage had already been done. We've reached a new level of insanity with Donald Trump. The Washington Post decided to fact-check Trump's inauguration speak and took issues with many innocuous statements, such as, "You came by tens of millions to become part of a historic movement, the likes of which the world has never seen." But how was that not true? The media thought fact-checking was not needed for Barack Hussein Obama, or today for Joe Biden. The press just takes everything Obama and Clinton said and Biden at face value. The radical hypocrisy is appalling. And the American people, thank God, are beginning to see through it all. I thank you for joining me today. I would caution all of us not to panic over this coronavirus. Yes, it's serious. In World War II, we were not only instructed to stay home, but at night you had to turn all your lights off. You had to sit in the dark or go to bed. We haven't reached that level. That was to keep the Nazis from bombing us. Thank you for joining me today, and I'll be back again, God willing, next week. Same time and the very same station.